Well, as far as I can remember, this is the first time that a book has been written about the metaphysical and spiritual aspects of police work with Ingrid Dean. So we'll be back with her in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Ingrid, tell me a little bit about Angel Shield, then we'll bring in Officer Steve Sokol.
Angel Shield is about a Detroit police officer, Stephen, who was on patrol with a partner, saw a car go through a red light. There were bystanders watching and basically giving the signal like, aren't you going to stop that car? And, of course, they pursued the car. It wasn't in a chase, but it didn't stop right away. It just kept going. Finally, the car stopped, and as soon as Steve and his partner started to get out of the car, the people in the front car got out and started shooting with a automatic Uzi weapon. And I'll let him tell the rest of the story, but that's like 800 rounds coming at them all at once.
800.
And they should have been killed, you know?
All right. Let's bring in Officer Steve. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me tonight.
Still back in my old hometown of Detroit, huh?
Yes, sir.
Well, I miss it. I go down to the Rensen all the time when I was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've got a lot of good things.
Sure is. All right, tell us a little bit about your story, Steve.
Okay, this took place in 1992. I was assigned to a patrol unit. At the time, it was called the 12th Precinct. It's now the Western District. And for whatever reason, at the start of the shift, our lieutenant was upset with us and decided to split up myself and my regular scout car partner. So I was actually paired up with a female officer from the desk. I don't believe she had a lot of street experience. And we started patrolling the area. We answered our runs probably about halfway into the shift. We started getting hungry, and I said, hey, let's go get a bite to eat. We knew of a restaurant in the area. So we were northbound on a street called Wyoming and stopped at a red light. There was a car in front of us. It was occupied by three men. Light was red, and all of a sudden, they drove through the light. So my first thought was perhaps the light was stuck. So I looked up. It turns green. Everyone around me is looking at me like, well, you're the police. What are you going to do about it,
yeah.
You know?
Go get them, right?
So, right, exactly. So I tell her, look, let's not even write these guys a ticket. Let's just pull them over, give them a warning, and we'll be on our way. And so I turn the lights on, and they're not stopping. It's not a high-speed chase. They're only going about 5 miles an hour, but they're refusing to stop. So I get on the radio, and I tell the dispatcher, hey, we're north on Wyoming, following Boy Nora Lincoln 661, refusing to stop. So all of a sudden, these guys turn down a side street. Again, not a high rate of speed. They're just not stopping. And then finally, they turn north. I believe the street was Kentucky. Then they stopped. They stopped under a street light. It was dark out. Something had told me, look, this isn't right. Be careful. And I told her, be careful, my partner. And I stopped farther back than I normally would on a regular traffic stop. So as I begin to exit the car, all of a sudden, the right front passenger of the suspect vehicle leans out with a, I believe it was an Intratec 9mm, which is similar to an Uzi, and he just opens fire on my car and myself. He probably got off about three rounds before I even realized that I was under fire. It was happening so fast. So if I could do it all over again, I'd probably run to the back of the car. But for whatever reason at the time, I dove back into the driver's seat, and I grabbed the radio, and I shouted to the dispatcher, hey, 1211, priority, officer in trouble, officer under fire. And at the time, we had computers with an emergency locator button. So I must have pushed that button about 100 times, and the button transmits a signal to the dispatcher that says you're in trouble and gives your location. So
okay.
I'm on the radio. I'm under fire. All of a sudden, I can see the bullets from the suspect's gun tearing through the hood of the police car, tearing through the metal. I could see the metal peeling back. It's coming right across on an angle, right through the driver's door. And I've got a computer to my right. I can't get out that way. And I realized really quick I was in a bad situation. I was pinned. So bullets are tearing across on an angle, blocking my path. And All I could think to do was pull my gun out. I'm a right-handed shooter, but I put my gun in my left hand, and I was going to try and squeeze off some rounds from a seated position towards the suspect. As I began to do that, the suspect fired a perfect shot right at my face, and the windshield exploded. So I thought to myself, there is no way that I did not get hit. And I remember, as crazy as it sounds, I remember looking down at my shirt, looking for a hole. I knew I had a vest on, but I still thought, the way the glass exploded right in front of my face, I thought there's just no way. I had to be hit, but I wasn't hit. So I couldn't get out. Bullets are still coming. And I went to fire some rounds off, realizing, you know, I might not make it out of this. All of a sudden, the car filled with the brightest golden light you could imagine. I don't know how to describe it, but it was just a second, and the whole car filled with light, almost a blinding light. And then I heard a voice behind me. It was a male voice, and it says, "You will not be harmed. You're going to be fine." I didn't turn around and look at who was talking. I just heard this voice. The car went black, and all of a sudden, before my eyes, in front of the driver's side door of the scout car where I had to get out, I saw what appeared to be a shield forming. And it, only way I can describe it, it was like a armor plate almost forming before my eyes, but it was a golden shield, transparent. And I knew at that moment, I had a feeling, I just knew I was not going to be touched. I wouldn't be harmed. I stepped out of the car, and at that point, I emptied my gun at the suspect, giving him everything I had. They fled northbound, and I wasn't sure if I had hit him or not, but they continued northbound. My gun was locked open, and that's an indication that it was empty. So I reached for another magazine. I reloaded quickly, and my first thought was pursue the bad guys. So I look over, and all of a sudden, I see the passenger door of my scout car open, and I see my partner's hat lying in the street, and my heart sank. And I thought, she must have been hit. There's just, you know, no way. So I told the dispatcher the car is northbound, the suspects are fleeing northbound, and I ran over to the passenger side of my car expecting to see my partner, and she wasn't there. So I'm searching for her. I figured maybe she got hit, crawled to the bushes, crawled to a nearby house, and I can't find her. And I tell the dispatcher I cannot find my partner.
How bizarre, Steve, huh?
So now the cavalry's coming. I can hear the backup units coming from everywhere. State police, Detroit police, Ferndale, everybody's coming.
And how much time was transpiring between call and it's just minutes, I bet.
I'm sure it was a minute. To me, it seemed like hours, but I'm sure this all happened very quickly. It was just minutes. So I see the scout cars pulling up now, the backup units. And in the back of one of the backup units, I see my partner. And it still doesn't dawn on me, how did she get in the back of the scout car?
Yeah.
Well, the officer driving tells me, hey, I found her hiding behind a building a block and a half away.
Oh, my God.
Well, then I realized when the shooting started, she fled. She left me, 1-on-3. She never fired one shot, never called for help, never said I was under fire. So I was really...
She broke down.
She just took off and ran. And, you know, I mean, everything happens for a reason. I have no... To this day, I still have no hard feelings for her or animosity, anything like that. It just happened. And, but it's, you know, I can't tell your callers there's a God, there isn't a God, you know, what religion they should be. But I can tell you my own experience. I firmly believe there's a God, and I believe that because of a higher power, I'm here today. I'm able to come home to my children.
That's a wonderful story. Did they ever catch the thugs?
They did. They caught everybody the next day. The shooter is still in prison to this day, and I didn't hit him. Turned out I fired two shots right next to his head. I just missed him and hit the vehicle. So he is still in prison to this day.
What possessed him, Steve, to unload on you? Why didn't they simply say,
Well, see, right, what, as I understand it, what happened was these guys, when I hit the lights to pull them over, they were arguing. I could see an argument in the vehicle. And from what I understand, as I went to court later, the shooter had just gotten out of prison. And he told the driver, he said, look, he thought it was a one-man unit. He didn't see my partner. Uh-huh. And he said, I'm going to kill him. We're going to get this over with, and then I'm leaving because I'm not going back to prison. So he just thought he would take me out, and that would be the end of it. That's what happened.
So in his mental condition, he's not going back. He's going to take you out because he can't stand it. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So I was just going to say, I wanted to clarify, in no way, shape, or form am I discrediting female police officers.
No, I understand. That's not even a question. Is she still an officer though? I'm curious. I mean, if
you know what, I haven't. After that incident, we kind of went our separate ways. I transferred to different commands, and I really am not sure if she's still on the job or not. I know what happened was they tried to fire her. They brought her up on departmental charges based on the incident, and to my knowledge, the Board of Police Commissioners reinstated her. The Board of Police Commissioners said, hey, that's a pretty scary situation. We probably would have panicked, too. That was their answer. So. She was reinstated. We never worked together after that, and I really don't know what happened to her. I don't know if she's still on the job or not.
You don't need a partner to panic.
No, not at all.
You know, and it really doesn't matter whether you're male or female, does it? I mean, I know that there's male people that do that, too, and it's so unfortunate. But
you know, after that happened, I had a new scout car partner that was a female, and she was tough as nails. I mean, she was by my side for years, and, you know, She was always with me, no doubt. So I just wanted to clarify, I'm not discrediting female officers at all.
Thank you. Yeah.
No problem.
Totally,
Steve,
understand.
Back many, many years. How long have you been on the force, Steve? When did you start?
This is year 24 for me.
24. I think you probably did not know my friend because, tragically, when we got out of college, he was a friend of my dear friend in college, Steve Cerrone, who's a dentist, and his name was Mike Bosick, and he got killed within a year on duty. Going into some store at night, he figured there were two people in there that had broken in, and they shot him.
Too bad.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've lost a few friends on the job as well. It's not easy.
There's an incredible disregard for life. And I just can't understand why, Steve.
Right.
But thank you for sharing your story. Marvelous.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thanks,
appreciate
Steve.
It.
Okay. That's an incredible story, Ingrid.
It is. And in spirit of the badge, all the stories have an emotionally evoking type response after the story like that. I mean, that story really touches me. So when I compiled this book and did this project and got all these stories from these officers, I realized that they weren't just extraordinary, but they were emotional. And people don't understand that we have feelings, you know, that we go through these things and, you know, we're supposed to act normal and be normal and come home at night and have dinner with our family and stuff. But these incidents are exceptional, and they're never shared.
A friend of mine tonight was telling me that he was in a car a couple days ago, and he had a bottle of root beer. And he was drinking it. He was on his way home. It was 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. He works late in the restaurant business. And he's from Vietnam. And he said a police officer pulled right up alongside of him, and he loves police officers, but he decided he was just going to play around. So he drank from the bottle of root beer real fast, enough for the officer to see it, and put it down real fast as if he was trying to hide it. Sure enough, those lights were on
in a second. And why wouldn't they be?
Exactly. So he pulls him over. He says, would you get out of the car, please? And he did. And as the officer went in to check the car, he sees this bottle of root beer, and he came back and he said, you're screwing around with me, aren't you? And he said, yes, I am. And they both started laughing. He said that was pretty good. And they talked for 15 minutes.
Well, and that's great. The police officer has a sense of humor. And,
yes.
And that's so important in our work. There's a whole chapter in Spirit of the Badge that is about the humor and the healing behind it. Because if we didn't laugh, we would die right away. I mean, I really truly think that when police officers retire, they die of heart attacks because they don't laugh enough.
Well, we got a police officer retiring out here in the St. Louis area. He's in Rock Hill, which is a suburb, and he's the motorcycle police officer, and he's notorious. There have been stories in the Post-Dispatch about him, Ingrid. He will not let anyone out of a ticket. I mean, he'll ticket his mother. But his name's Ziegler. He's retiring in about a month or so. And I bet there are a lot of motorists out here who are probably happy. But a nice guy. He goes into a deli of a friend of mine who owns it. And, he's retiring. He's going to give it. But this guy was relentless. Never let anyone out of a ticket.
Right. And that might be a little extreme. I mean, we're not all like that.
He'll be looking for me tomorrow morning, guaranteed.
Well.
But he won't find
me. We're not all like that.
He won't find me. Miracles, which is what I think just happened with Officer Steve, beyond his intuition, I think truly that was a miracle. I mean, for his police cab to fill up in this glow of light, and then for him to see the shield, enough for him to get out of his car and feel secure and protect himself is simply amazing.
Isn't it, though? And that happens in our work every day. And that's exactly what I wanted to project, to share in the book, Spirit of the Badge. We may be conservative and shy, and we're not so apt to share about the wonderful things we do. It's just not our nature. And this is what I wanted to share to the public, is that we experience miracles just like you do. Some of them are incredible, so incredible we're afraid to share them. And this is what Spirit of the Badge is all about, these types of stories.
Well, you are conveying the message. Who would you like to read these stories? Everybody, not just police officers, obviously, right?
Anybody that appreciates miracles, all those extraordinary situations, those pivotal experiences that change your life, first responders, police officers, of course, EMS, paramedics, firemen, all the people that really have that innate desire, whether they realize it or not, you know, they might even be subconscious to why they joined, police work or fire work, but they want to be of service. So all of those people I know would just love the book. It makes a wonderful gift for any first responder or their family and friends. And then, of course, all the people that love unexplainable phenomena.
Some
of the stories in this book are about UFOs and reptilian creatures and that kind of thing. So anyone that's interested in that would love the book.
We had a number of police officers out here in Millstadt, Illinois, which is across the river in Illinois. Years ago, they saw a huge triangular-shaped object, chased it. And I'm telling you, it's got to be out of this world. Incredible stories like that.
I know that there are true UFOs, unidentified flying objects that are not from here, and I base that upon police experiences, policemen that have told me verbally, face-to-face, that object is not from here, and there's a couple stories in the book about that.
Let's talk about one of them, Ingrid, when we come back, and also we'll bring in police officer Todd Heller as well with his story. When we come back, this is fascinating. What a coast-to-coast ride. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment. Well, I've got to tell you, as you know, we've interviewed a number of guests on this program over the years, Ian, Art, George Knapp, and myself. Ingrid Dean has really touched something here. Spirit of the Badge. And we'll be back with more stories in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're with Ingrid Dean, author of Spirit of the Badge. Ingrid, tell us about the story, Denny, with police officer Todd Heller.
Denny is a story that really touches my heart because it's in our area. And we never had a police officer that was ever killed in the line of duty in the Traverse City Police Department. And it happened to be Denny Finch. He was my friend. We worked midnights together for a long time. In fact, at 7 a.m. in the morning, we might hit the bar for a couple brewskis. yeah, seems like an unlikely time. But I really grew to know him and his friends. And when he was killed in the line of duty, it just really, it takes a piece out of you. And when I talked to Todd Heller, who is going to be on the line in a moment, he really had some synchronicities, some intuitive responses, miracles that happened in that situation. He wasn't even supposed to be there when that happened. He was just supposed to guard a corner. So as he tells the story, he'll explain how, he just went with the flow, worked in the moment, responded at the time, and he helped Denny in some way.
All right, let's bring in Officer Todd Heller with his story. Hi, Todd.
Good evening. How are you?
Hi. Thanks for staying up so late here for us.
Oh, not a problem.
Thanks, Todd.
Hey, how you doing, Ingrid?
Good, good, good.
Tell us your story, Todd.
Well, back in May of 1998, I'm with the Grand Traverse County Sheriff's Office.
Oops, sorry about that.
And Sergeant Finch was with the Traverse City Police Department on that particular day. I was getting off duty. I had probably about 5 minutes left in my shift and was heading home for the day. Didn't really know much that was going on. When I arrived back to the station, I just heard on the radio that city police was asking for a patrol unit to block a certain intersection in the neighborhood. I knew there was an incident with a man with a gun or something, but didn't hear anything much other than that, because I worked a different part of the county than in the city. I didn't hear anybody that the city that was available to set the intersection, and that intersection was right on my way home. So, you know, I thought it was just going to be a real quick, you know, 10-15 minute deal. So, you know, I volunteered to park at the intersection, which, you know, made about 2 blocks. I didn't really know it at the time, but it was about 2 blocks from where the incident was taking place. So I just sat up at that intersection, and I was there for, ended up for probably about an hour, hour and a half, and just blocking that intersection off. And I knew the general area where the incident was taking place. Couldn't really see it from where I was at, but I was approximately about 2 blocks away. And I was just standing there, and I noticed an elderly couple come out of the house, and they're coming out to the sidewalk. They're about 2 blocks away, so I knew they were pretty close to the general area where this incident was taking place. Okay. You know, and at that time, still, there wasn't much chatter on the radio or anything, so I didn't really know exactly, you know, what the city police was doing or what was going on, but I figured the couple was pretty close to where the incident's taking place, so I thought I'd just walk down there and just let them know to either go back in the house. So I just walked down there. I was just walking the couple blocks, and as soon as I got to the couple, you know, I just got out of my mouth, you know, excuse me, sir, ma'am. Soon as I said that, it was just a whole bunch of gunfire going off. The couple, for an elderly couple, they ran pretty quick and ran right back in their house. where this was taking place is a pretty dense neighborhood, so you couldn't really see where or hear where the fire was coming from. It's more of like an echo. So I saw this huge tree, and so it looked like a good spot to go hide behind, and so I ran for that tree, and it just so happens where that tree was inside the city police perimeter, and about 20 feet from the porch from that the front of the house, and it took me just a little bit to kind of get my bearings together and you know, figure out what was going on, because I didn't know exactly where this was at.
Right.
And it just, so here I am, I'm standing behind this tree, and I look behind me, and I got a bunch of, you know, city police officers looking at me like, you know, what are you doing? And it's like, I'm just like, I don't know how I got here. and that's, you know, when I looked at the porch of the residence, it's maybe about 20 feet away, and you know, the suspect, John Clark, began yelling some things from inside the house. I didn't see him at that point, but then did notice Sergeant Finch laying on the porch. About that time, I saw Mr. Clark come out by the door, and I saw the assault rifle in his arms. And I wasn't too sure if he was going to shoot Denny again. So I had my duty weapon drawn, and I fired a number of rounds at John Clark. He either fell or ran from the door. I didn't know which at the time. I just knew I fired my rounds, and he just went back in the home. Prior to me shooting, he was yelling a lot of profanities, and after I shot, the rounds I fired, he wasn't yelling anymore. I thought maybe I hit him. I holstered my weapon, and I crawled up to the porch where Denny was at. And excuse me.
That's all right.
Well, it's a long time ago, and still.
Of course.
Denny was. He was asking me to get, you know, he wanted to get off that porch, and he was shot multiple times, from his shoulders, you know, down to his feet. And so where I was standing, there's a the handrail on the porch, and this is an old home. And they don't build houses like this anymore. I thought I'd be able just to pull down the railing and maybe, you know, just drag them off the top of the porch, but it would not budge. And so I figured, well, you know, I don't hear John Clark anymore. I thought maybe I hit him. So, you know, I decided to run up the porch in front of the door and where John was at, and ran up there to grab Denny and, you know, got him off.
Bring it back, yeah.
Yeah, get him off the porch, which we did. And the amazing thing is probably about 5 seconds after I dragged him off the porch, John Clark was back at the doorway with another rifle and shooting again. Apparently what happened is one of my rounds I fired hit John Clark's assault rifle and jammed it. And so he ran downstairs to the basement where he had another arsenal of weapons. And that was between him being downstairs, grabbing the next rifle, is when I was able to get up on the porch, grab Denny, get him off the porch, just enough time before John Clark started shooting again. So,
jeez.
Yeah.
And did they finally get John Clark eventually, Todd?
Eventually that evening, he did sustain a gunshot wound to the chest, and it was quite a few hours later before he finally came to the door. When I say came to the door, he was kind of, by that time, he lost a lot of blood, and he finally gave up, and he was taken in custody, and, you know, went to trial. fought the following year, went to trial, and he was convicted, and now he's spending the rest of his life in prison.
Mm.
Yeah, so just, you know, one of those things, it's how, you know, how things all work out. I mean, I don't even work in the city. It's just how the all the events added up to how it all came together. That was the one of the things when, you know, Sergeant Dean was talking about doing the book. It was like, you know, how I ended up there is just one of those amazing things of, you know, I don't really consider myself a religious person, maybe more of a spiritual person, but, sure. You know, how does it all work out that, you know, I start from, you know, I'm heading home to two blocks away to now I'm behind a tree in the middle of the whole perimeter to, and all how all that worked out. And unfortunately, Denny was shot about 23 times. But fortunately, he was able to, the doctors were able to keep him alive long enough to have family and everybody. We were able to come to the hospital and see him and everything before, unfortunately, they did have to, you know, put a plug on him. So
you at least gave him enough time for his moment.
Yeah, that was one of the things I'm proud about is, you know, just able that, you know, his wife and his kids and everything had an opportunity to, you know, spend some time with him before, before they had to pull the plug. Yeah, sorry.
But, you're a hero, Todd. Let me tell you.
You are. Yeah.
It's you know, any of the officers, whether the city police or the sheriff's department or state police, or any other police officer for that matter, I'm sure would have done exactly the same thing I did. It just how it all worked out. I mean, just amazing how the chain of events, you know, it's almost like the stars are lined up just a certain way that all the events went the way it did that, you know, I was able to go home to my wife and able to get, you know, Dennis off the porch and it worked out the way it did. Obviously, it would have been better if, you know, Danny would have survived.
23 rounds, Todd. That's a lot. Can you imagine, Todd, how many police officers you have in their cars right now probably crying?
Yeah, well, you know, it's
people driving by and they're seeing an officer crying in his car.
Well, you know, this was in 1998, and, you know, I don't talk a lot about this, and it's, I didn't really realize it was still, you know, still sits with me this way. You know, it's
probably good for you to talk about this tonight.
Yeah.
Well, and it's so profound that, you know, you were there, that he could say goodbye to his family, and that's just precious. There's nothing that there's nobody that can ever take that away from you.
And you know, Ingrid and Todd, both of you, you can train and train and train for episodes like this, but until you're really in it, it's a different atmosphere, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it seems more like a dream than anything else. I mean, you don't really, I mean, at the time, you know, that was the first time I was ever involved in a shooting. And it really does, you really do fall back on training, and everything just clicks. And it just, you know, it doesn't really hit you until after. I mean, it really didn't hit me of what really happened until I got home. Took a shower and I was laying in my Lazy Boy chair, and you know, then it hit me. You know, the adrenaline dump was gone, and how it all worked out is, you know, I'll never understand how the chain of events happened that I ended up there that day and how it all worked out that day. I don't know. Can't explain it.
Thank you, Todd.
Yep. Thanks, Todd.
You know, these stories are so enlightening, Ingrid, and so emotional.
They really are, and I think that that's such a important part of police work that's left out. People think we're robots, that we're black and white, and that all we want to do is stop cars and give them tickets. But we'll get these situations where we have to respond in the moment, and we take our work so seriously. You know, we try to have fun and laugh, but really our sole purpose is being of service to people. And the emotions that go with it are part of our job, and they're seldom shared. And I think that's part of our problem as a country, as a world, is that we're so patriarchal right now. It's almost like we want to be so intellectual, so heady, so formatted in everything we do, and we forget about our sensitivity, about emotions, about making judgments and being empathetic and sympathetic and intuitive. And those are all what I call female or receptive qualities, and we need them both.
We sure do.
Yeah.
Hey, let's lighten it up. Tell me a UFO story.
Okay. I had a friend of mine. His name is Trooper Goldner, and he has now passed away, but I'm one of the few people that he gave me a photograph of the UFO that he saw, and he sat with me, and I wrote his story. And he was on patrol. It was 6 a.m. in the morning. He got a call from the desk sergeant. From a woman had called and said, there is this very, very unusual object hovering above my home in Kingsley, Michigan. Now, at first, the desk sergeant thought, oh, this must be a mental from the local hospital. A bunch of mental patients had been released. But there was more to it. The trooper on patrol, he gave a couple tickets out. He arrived at the house. The lady said, as she approached the door, did you see it? Did you see it? And he said, well, no, ma'am, I didn't. And when he told me this story, he said, Ingrid, he said, I didn't see anything when I pulled in the driveway. It was a clear early morning sky. So the woman at the door drags him in, pulls him through the house. She says, come with me to these sliding doors. He gets there. He takes one step out. He looks up, and his knees buckle. He said, Ingrid, I never saw anything like this before in my life. It was as huge as a football field. It looked like honeycomb cereal. As he looked up there, it was colors that he had never seen before. This is a conservative trooper. This conservative Christian, a member of the school board, smokes like a fiend, drinks coffee, a very normal life.
Yeah, and I can't believe we have this craft. It's got to be coming from some other place, Ingrid.
Well, he was adamant about it. He said, this is not some military aircraft. It can't be. It started to get higher and higher as it hovered. The lady went next door to her neighbors. They got a video camera, and they actually videotaped it.
You got to get me a copy of that, Ingrid, if you can. I'd love to see it. We'll be back now with phone calls. I'll give police officers a special hotline to share some of their stories. And we've still got one more police officer story as well on Coast to Coast AM.